A group of activists have been traveling the country in a school bus, cooking food and feeding people in communities from New Orleans to Los Angeles and beyond. They call themselves Everybody's Kitchen. They base their work on the belief that no one should go hungry. The bus is fitted with all the amenities of a professional commercial kitchen and also provides transportation across the country and a floor to sleep on. Everybody's Kitchen recently arrived in Los Angeles, where they are stationed temporarily near Skid Row. They show up every weekday at 4 p.m. on the corner of 6th and Gladys, handing out fresh cooked food to anyone who wants it. I spoke last week with three members of Everybody's Kitchen who go only by their first names, Floppy, Gin, and Anne. I started by asking Floppy to describe the project.
Well, basically, Everybody's Kitchen is just a group of individuals that travel around on a mobile kitchen that collects food that would other be wasted and cooks it up and distributes it or shares it with people who want to eat with us. Basically, the common focus of the group is basically that I think we all believe that everybody has the right to eat, whether or not they have a penny in their pocket or not. And it doesn't matter. You don't have to be poor to share. Sharing of food has been going on since the dawn of time. On that note, this function has been put together by individuals, and there's also always a high turnover of individuals that participate. And each individual may have a different calling to participate in this kind of work, and that's up to that individual. But as far as a common denominator, it's basically, I think everybody just has the feeling that every person has a right to eat.
Mm. Where is Everybody's Kitchen based?
It's not based. It's more like a nomadic kind of function.
So you travel the country?
Correct. We go from town to town where we feel is needed, which is basically everywhere, unfortunately. And it's a kind of a function that I wish we didn't have to do. But in reality, you know, there's definitely, even in this country, a lot of hungry people out there.
How long has this project been going on for, if you can call it a project?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess a project is a good word for it. The project, under the title Everybody's Kitchen, has been going since February 1992. It has been through multiple vehicles. This is actually the third bus that has been put together, or I call it a tool, because that's all it is. And the reason why it's labeled Everybody's Kitchen is because some of us used to have a belief that all we do is we travel around the country with a bunch of pots and pans and cook food for people who need it. But we want to really encourage people in the area that we're at to participate, you know. And I think that also builds self-esteem in a lot of folks that may be lacking that, to participate, to realize we're not on a pedestal, that we're not a church group, we're not a government group, but we're the same people, even though some of us as individuals have chosen this by choice. But we're the same people if you're on Skid Row or not. And once people realize that, wow, these guys are sleeping outside or in vehicles also, you know, that really breaks down a lot of barriers. And to get individuals, if you want to call an individual on Skid Row, to come in and participate or just even help where we actually serve the food, you know, the real paycheck is spreading that around and hoping that the example that is set by just our presence in doing it in the situation that we're in will grow. And hopefully that example will grow. And the real paycheck is if people are really turned on by seeing the example and participating in that kind of work, even after the buses have been moved on.
I want to bring some of the other guests into the conversation, and I'd like to talk to you next. What is your involvement with Everybody's Kitchen? How long have you been involved?
I've been involved for a few years. I first randomly ran into Everybody's Kitchen in Philadelphia, near where I grew up, and was totally inspired by what they were doing. And I participated in putting together this last bus and we've been on the road with this vehicle for a little over a year now.
Tell us about this bus. I mean, we've been talking about it, but describe it for our listeners.
It's a full-size bus. It looks like a school bus on the outside, more or less, and the inside is outfitted sort of like a commercial kitchen. I mean, we have a six-burner Vulcan stove, a griddle, two ovens, prep tables, three basin sinks, and it all functions, running water, propane.
And so you helped put this bus together to make a mobile kitchen?
Yes. Hmm. Yes, basically just after being inspired by the ones that I've seen that everybody's kitchen has, used as tools in the past. And I just felt like it was so important that a project like this continues, especially in these days where there's an abundance of wealth in this country and so many people that don't eat on a daily basis. It's just too disturbing for me to, pass up the chance to do whatever I can to help.
Let's go finally to our third guest, Gin. Am I pronouncing it right?
That's correct.
Tell us your involvement with Everybody's Kitchen. Why are you involved? How long have you been participating?
Probably the shortest time I've met them. I've known some people from the Everybody's Kitchen for years. I used to do a lot of activism in the anti-nuclear and anti-war scene, and I also worked on a lot of homeless issues.
And where are you from?
I grew up in Brooklyn. Mm. I was born in Scotland, but I grew up in Brooklyn. And so I got involved a few years back. I was also in Philly, but I was helping organize some of the stuff that was going on there for the Republican convention. And so I hung out a little bit after that, and I got involved a few more times. And I think that part of the politics is you get tired sometimes of working on the issues. And you see, as the politics are gone, people have to eat. If you need water and food to survive, then as far as I'm concerned, it should be free. Anything you need to survive should be given to you. You should help grow it, but it all should be free. And I think that's where we lose track of things, is we think everybody deserves to get something, but then they're like, no, they don't earn it. They don't quite need it. And if we can spend $12 billion a month on a war overseas, I think that we can actually feed all the people in this country and the rest of the world. Hmm.
So if the food is given away for free, how do you acquire it?
Basically gleaning, going to people that have extra food and saying, hey, instead of throwing this out, and if you look at how much is in dumpsters right around this area, it's incredible. And so we just get the food and cook. We talk to people, we ask for donations, and we ask people to help us out, and we tell them what we're doing. And people are pretty glad to help out.
So you get food from individuals, or?
Sometimes individuals, but we also go to the large markets and talk to people. Sometimes you go to supermarkets. I've done it. We've done walks across the country, various things. We'll talk to everybody from the smallest grocer to a big produce stock. And you just tell people what you're doing. And most of the time, they're very interested in helping, especially when they see how much waste they're getting rid of. Mm. And then, because if you can cook it that day, it doesn't have to be thrown away. Whereas you might not be able to get it to a supermarket in time and let it sit on the stand for a few days, but you can cook it right that night and it'll help people, and there's no reason not to do that.
Do you ever get turned away?
Oh, yeah, I've been turned away a number of times, and I've worked on different walks where I try to teach other people how to do it by phone, and you get 50 people saying no, but as soon as that one person says, yeah, I'll give you 80 cases of this, or I'll give you a case of some kind of food, or I'll do something right away, it makes you feel so much better, and it just keeps you working on the issue.
Do you ever get funny looks from groceries or markets where they basically can't fathom what you're doing?
Yeah, and unfortunately, especially the higher grade food markets that seem to do that, they can't fathom that. They just rather throw the food out. But if you go to someplace that's smaller, they understand exactly what's going on because they see people going through their dumpsters and they know there are a lot of people that need to eat. And so as opposed to putting it in the garbage and people come out, they can just give it to us so we can take it through and get cleaned up and take care of it.
Now, I understand that you were in New Orleans and helping communities over there. Maybe, Anne, can you tell us a little bit about that? When did you go there? How long were you there? And what did you do?
We arrived in November last year, and we were there about 5 or 6 months. Parked with Common Ground, and what they were doing was helping residents in the Ninth Ward gut their houses, because there was a date that was set for any houses that weren't gutted in a certain amount of time were going to be demolished and repossessed. And these people's lives were totally devastated. They didn't have a lot of money to begin with, and therefore couldn't afford to fix their houses. So we were there serving volunteers and residents.
How were you seen in the community? Were you welcomed, or did people treat you with skepticism?
Both. And I mean, I think there were some people who were skeptical, and then there were also a lot of people that were participating. It's hard to say, really. I mean, other than we just got both kinds of reactions.
Well, there were a number of people that lived either both there in the community itself or around the community that had ended up staying up at where Common Ground was, at St. Mary of the Angels school. And they'd never seen anything, I don't think, like that. They had been devastated. And part of the problem is that whenever you have, like if the earthquake in 89 in Watsonville, in mostly the Mexican-American community, they did the same thing. They went and fixed Santa Cruz first. They said the people need someplace to shop. Well, people really need someplace to live. And if you go down to New Orleans and the place that they're talking about, they're devastated at the Ninth Ward, they didn't care about fixing the houses. They didn't come help the people out. And when they moved them, they didn't keep track of where they were. So a lot of people that were back there had lost most of their families and lost most of their community and were living in these tiny FEMA trailers. And they would come and talk to us about how these little FEMA trailers, it'd be them and maybe parts of their family in there, and they didn't know where anybody else was. And they had no idea how to get in touch with the people that were their neighbors. And they would just had no clue how to deal with what was going on with that. And you talk to the government and FEMA, they didn't know where people were sent. And then we had people like this friend of ours, Val, who would come and he would get things and he would help do breakfast in the morning and he would help get us whatever we needed for the bus. And he just didn't, you know, he had not been around any of these kind of things before. You know, he had grown up and thought that nobody really cared about a lot of what was going on. No individuals cared enough to go out and do things on their own without some massive organization behind them. And so people were very happy when we came down to cook, and they would ask if they could help out in the bus. They would come in and help to cook or wash dishes. We had little children come and ask to take food and just be glad to talk to us and hang out and have a place where people weren't giving them a hard time. And we're just accepting and saying, come on in, help prepare vegetables. Come on and do this and help out. And those people were very much inclined to sit there. In the beginning, they were kind of wondering, why are we down here? Because we're mainly white, and most people were middle class. And then they come out and find out that, you know, we're just like everybody else. We're not down here. We're not judging anybody about anything. We're just down there because we think it needs help. And if we needed help, we'd want people to come and help us.
So what are you guys doing in Los Angeles?
Well, part of the reason here is it has to be an element of warmth because the water for the bus is outside and underneath. And when the water, in order for the water to flow to wash dishes and make the food and to cook and everything, the water has not to be frozen. So if you're in some place like Montana right now, the bus would not work.
So you guys naturally gravitate to the south of the country this time of year?
Something like that, yeah, south and the west, where as long as it won't freeze. You know, it can be cold, but if it's a sustainable freeze and the water would freeze, then we wouldn't be able to use any sinks at all.
And what are you doing specifically in Los Angeles while you're here? Are you feeding people in the same way that you did in New Orleans?
We're sharing food down at 6th and Gladys about 4 o'clock Monday through Friday and just doing the same thing, inviting anybody to come out and eat and have a good time and be able to talk to the people. I think there's a whole disassociation. Everybody wants to, you should help the homeless, but nobody wants to get involved with the actual homeless community themselves. They're afraid to be on the streets. They're afraid to go out there. And I've noticed that even if you go to shelters, when I ran a homeless place in Vegas for 15 months in the early 90s, and people try to get this disassociation. If you come up from the streets to work in the shelter, you're supposed to forget about your friends because you're supposed to better yourself. And therefore, it's acting like everybody else is below you. And we don't believe that at all. We think there's nobody beneath us. We're all down there together. And we're all trying to do the same thing. We want to take care of each other. And so if you're out there and you're sharing the food right in the community, people get to talk to you. There are people from all over the country there. And we've been living all over the country between all of us. So we sit there and we talk to people about where they're from, what's going on there, how they're feeling when they're there. And just people stop and eat for 20 minutes, half hour. So many people just stay there and talk to you for like an hour and a half, 2 hours. And it gives you a sense of community, which is what we think the people really need.
Where do you sleep?
I sleep in my sleeping bag. I live out of a duffel bag, essentially.
So and not on the bus.
I sleep on
the
bus.
Oh, you do sleep on the bus.
And most of us are sleeping somewhere. But, you know, most of us are not housed. We do have friends that are housed. And part of that is that if you want to have a nomadic existence, then it's harder if you have an apartment or a house. And I think also if you're into organizing and working in community, if I have to go do an anti-nuclear thing or something and I feel like I'm called to do that, I can just leave at any point, pack up my bag and go.
So you've been living like this for how long?
Since pretty much, started living on the streets in the late 80s to find out what it was like. And then I co-founded Seeds of Peace in 86. I worked on different groups. So I've been doing this nomadic existence, even if we were housed. I've been on the road 6 to 8 months a year, generally, working on this kind of thing. So it's pretty much since 86, except for like 3 or 4 years.
So you do have a base that you go to several months of the
anymore.
Year?
Not anymore. I did at one point.
So now you're on the street full time?
And yeah, you just use email to find out what's going on. And if people need something, then I can just find out where to go.
Let's talk about some of the issues that were brought up earlier in the conversation, which is the right to food. Floppy, you mentioned that you wish that you didn't have to do this task. If you know, who do you think should be feeding the hungry?
I would have to say basically it'd be nice if there was some kind of sharing of food in every community that. More grassrooted, like, would be a really nice vision. I mean, people can argue that there is, you know, but it's also what kind of foods do you share, you know? I mean, do you share bologna sandwiches on Wonder Bread, you know, or do you try to be nutritious and healthy about it, you know? Food for the body and mind, you know, it really helps. I mean, I've had people after a couple months' stay come up and say, you know, gosh, I feel just so much better, and, you know.
So to go back to the earlier question, you were saying that you think that food should be a shared thing in general throughout a community. I mean, should we consider the government responsible to make sure the hungry are fed, or is it the responsibility of the community to feed each other?
Yeah, I mean, you know, why is it such a mind-blowing issue to consider sharing of food an active thing? I mean, what have we lost in this society where communities don't look after each other's, you know? And yeah, people have problems and stuff like that, but isn't that that's really kind of the sad thing is why we as a society have not looked after each other as human beings.
In your experience, having done this now for a few years, it's not an easy life. I can't imagine.
It isn't. I mean, we just a lot of times have challenges that are different from people who, you know, do live in a house and go to a 9-to-5 job and stuff like that. But, I mean, there are positive sides to it, too. I mean, you get to see communities and see cities and see the country from a perspective that you wouldn't ordinarily, or I personally wouldn't ordinarily ever really see. And it seems really overbearing when you're not doing it, but if you just pick up and just do something, just do it, go into it head first, it just seems to work out. I mean, we have like things that happen to us, donations, people that come and help out of the blue sometimes when we feel like something's gonna fail or something, you know, it always, if your heart's there and you put your energy into it, the rest of it seems to come together. I mean, like building this bus and what we're doing right now, getting this most recent crew together. If you had asked me a year ago if we would be here doing this, I'd say I have no idea. I can't even imagine how that would work. Or even right before we came to Los Angeles, we weren't sure what we were doing at all, and we just decided to show up and do it, and it's been working out beautifully. So for people who do want to help or want to do something, I think one of the most important parts is reaching out to other people and creating your own community that is going to be productive and progressive, and with other people, with a group of people, you can do a lot more than you can as an individual.
Anne, Gin, and Floppy, three members of Everybody's Kitchen, which has arrived in Los Angeles. And by the way, they are operating right now out of a location southeast of Skid Row and would be greatly helped by having access to a water source in their vicinity. Everybody's Kitchen is currently traveling 2 miles a day to get their water for their cooking. If any organization, restaurant, or residents in their vicinity is willing to help them out by providing access to an exterior water faucet, you can contact them at ginstigator@yahoo.com. That's ginstigator@yahoo.com. And we will list that email address on our website, uprisingradio.org, later today as well.